Well, I've been here, I think, 11 months now. It's been great. Very, very glad to be here. Happy to be here to be with you. Yolanda's been here for about 9 months, I guess. And so when we first came to try out was in March of last year. And I preached a sermon then that had to do, as I'm sure you remember, every sermon I ever preached. But on Sunday morning, I preached a sermon which we went through a lot of history in order to show how God had planned from the beginning all the way up to bring about Christ, to bring about salvation through Christ, because he knew the man would be saved. And this lesson today is going to be somewhat similar to that, but it's also different. And there's different points and different aspects that I want to look at this with. But we're going to be going through history again in the lesson today. The beginning of God's nation. You know, from a very early age, we have been taught history. History about our country. We go to school, there's a subject called history. And maybe as you get older, it becomes American history and world history and all different kinds of specific histories. But we learn about George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. We learn about the history of the wars that have happened, the history of our world, the history even personally, maybe of our families. A lot of people like to go back and look at their families and see where they actually came from and see how their family got to the United States. And it's important for us to see history in the Bible also, because from the beginning of this world to the end of God's revelation, the entire book, it's important for us to understand the history of it. We need to remind ourselves of the history of the children of Israel, of the judges, of the kings, of the prophets, of the life of Jesus in the beginning and the development of the church. Now, many times when we study, people want to separate the Old Testament from the New Testament. And I even do that oftentimes in Bible class. If I teach on a Sunday and a Wednesday, I'll teach the New Testament one of the times and the Old Testament the other service, just so we can get both in there. The Old Testament, though, to some people, it's a book that contains a lot of strange laws and prophecies that people look at and say, well, I don't understand that. That doesn't make sense. Why would they have to do that? And then the New Testament is what people need to pay attention to, is what people's mindset often is. The Old Testament, a strange book, we don't need to have anything to do with that, and then we're going to pay attention only to the New Testament. But what we have to understand is, when you take the Old Testament, it fits perfectly into the New Testament. They go together, they flow together, they fit together. And when we read the Old Testament and see what happens in the Old Testament, we realize that each one of those Bible stories that we study reveals and leads into what we're going to see in the New Testament. And it's vital to understand all that in order to truly understand the Bible. Now, it's good to study the Old Testament one service and the New Testament the other service and do it that way. But we need to see how they fit together. How does it all come together? The historical events from the book of Genesis reveal how God was preparing to save mankind. And as we see the history of it all and it all flowing together, then we'll recognize that. We'll see what God wanted us to understand about it. So, we're going to go back to the beginning and see how sin came into the world. We're going to see how God provided a way for man to be saved from sin. And we're going to conclude in our lesson that we need to accept God's gift, appreciate it, be thankful for it, but see where his gift came from. How did it come about? What was the history that led up to the gift that we have through Christ? Well, we go back to the very beginning. And what we're going to do, we're just going to kind of put an outline down and step it down to show each step of the way, beginning with Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve, who were first created, and we read about their creation in Genesis chapters 2 and 3. When we look in Genesis chapter 2, and you might want to just turn back to Genesis, and we're going to start there and go through and look at various things in order to show the history that we need to reveal in order to get to where we're going. We don't have time to go through every little thing, but we're going to notice a few things. Remember, first of all, what the man and woman were told when they were in the Garden of Eden in Genesis chapter 2, after they were created, in verses 16 through 17. And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, "Of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in that day that you eat of it, you shall surely die." So the commandment was, here's a tree that you're going to allow to just keep growing. You're not going to touch it. You're not going to pick the fruit. You're not going to eat the fruit. You're going to stay away from it. And that is a tree that you are not allowed to partake of. The rest of them, it's okay. You can eat of the other fruit. Well, Satan tempted woman, who in turn convinced man to eat from the tree. And as a result, man died spiritually. And also, they're going to have to die physically, because they were going to be able to just live there and continue to live there. But then when they sinned and they died spiritually, the life, their physical life, was also going to have to end. And when we come down to Genesis chapter 3 and verse 19, as he's talking to man, "In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return." That's one of the punishments that was given to man, as each one was handed down punishment for their sin. Well, from this time on, man continued to sin. Remember, Adam and Eve had sons, so they had children. And the two sons that we talk about the most are Cain and Abel. And remember what Cain did to Abel. Because Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice to God. God was pleased with his sacrifice and not with Abel's. Cain became very jealous of him and killed his brother. So there's another sin that's mentioned. So they are sinning. Man is continuing to sin through this early history. And so that's why in Genesis chapter 6, God decided to destroy the world. And when he was going to destroy the world, it was going to be such that had never been seen before. They hadn't experienced anything like this before, but he wanted to save mankind and not destroy every single person. So Noah was one who found grace in God's sight, found grace in the eyes of the Lord, according to Genesis 6 and verse 8. And he wanted to save Noah. And he wanted to save his family. And so he determined that he was going to save mankind through Noah. Told Noah to build the ark, and told Noah then to preach to the people and let them know what's going to happen, so that they might also change and be right again with God to the degree that they could, but to change their lives so that they also could be saved. But they did not heed the warning. So it turns out only Noah and his wife and his three sons, who are Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And we're going to be using Shem. And so Shem is the next step down. You have Adam and Eve and then Noah. And then we're going to get to Shem, who is one of Noah's sons. Well, Shem was going to be saved along with his brothers, Ham and Japheth, and their wives. So we have Noah and his wife, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and then their three wives. So we got eight people in the ark, and that's all that were in the ark that were saved by this flood. Everyone else died. Now we know he saved the animal species by bringing them in to the ark, 2 by 2, so that they could survive. But these are the ones who, the people who survived, who were then going to replenish the earth. And after the flood, that's what happened. They began replenishing the earth. And so Shem was one of the ones who was doing that. When we look in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 18, it says, "But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall go into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you." So we have Shem and his wife who are going to come together. They're going to bear children along with the other sons and their wives. Well, one of Shem's sons was a man by the name of Terah. And when we go to Genesis chapter 11, we see Terah mentioned in Genesis chapter 11 and verse 25. Genesis 11 and verse 25. After he begot Terah, and you can go back to verse 10 and see who this is. This is the genealogy of Shem. And it says Shem was 100 years old and begot Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. Okay, so we have the first one after Shem. And then it keeps stepping down. And then it says he begot Terah in verse 25. So one of the ones who came from Shem, Noah's son, was Terah. Genesis 11 and verse 25. Well, one of Terah's sons, if you look at verse 27, this is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram. So now we get to Abraham. See how it all comes together. All the way back to Adam and Eve, going down to Noah, Noah's son's son, on down the line, and then you get to Abraham. So God is putting his plan together, isn't he? He's going to bring about his nation, and he's using these individuals to do this. With Abram, God made a covenant with Abram, and we have this listed when you look at Abram in Genesis chapter 12. The covenant that was made in verses 1 through 3. Again, we just keep going going through the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. The covenant was, "Now the Lord had said to Abram, 'Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. And you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed.'" So Abram left. He was told to get out of his country. He was 75 years old when he was told to get out of his country. And that means he leaves his homeland, leaves everything that he knew, and he got up and he left to go where God told him to go. God would show him the land. He didn't even know where he was going. "Just go, and I'll tell you when you get there." Well, when he gets to the land of Canaan, God told him that his descendants would receive that land. Later, God came to Abraham again. In Genesis chapter 15. Genesis chapter 15, verses 1 through 5. And he makes it clear that it's going to be his own offspring. It's going to be Abram's offspring who this promise is going to come through. So in Genesis chapter 15, and beginning in verse 1, "After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Abram, I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward.' But Abram said, 'Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eleazar of Damascus?" So he figured since he didn't have any kids, it would be through Eleazar. "Then Abram said, 'Look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir.' So through Eleazar. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "This one shall not be your heir, but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir." Then he brought him outside and said, "Look now toward heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." So his descendants would be as many as the stars in heaven, and not through Eleazar. Abram is the one who is going to have these children. So they figured, well, that's fine that it's going to come through Eleazar. But Sarah was old. At that time, her name was Sarai. She was old and didn't think that she would be able to have kids. And so they decided they're going to try to help God out a little bit. And because they didn't think there was any way that she could have kids. So in Genesis chapter 16 and 17, they decide that Abram is going to go into Hagar, who was one of Sarai's maids, and conceive a child that way. And they did. They conceived a child by the name of Ishmael. Well, Ishmael despised... Hagar despised Sarai. She didn't like her, didn't want to have anything to do with her. She didn't like the way she was with her. And we see in Genesis chapter 16 and verse 4, "So he went into Hagar and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress became despised in her eyes." So Sarai, because of this hatred that was there, Sarai dealt harshly with Hagar in verse 6. "So Abram said to Sarai, 'Indeed, your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please.' And when Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence." Okay, so there's this really bad relationship between the two. And of course, Sarai's jealous because Hagar had Abram's baby, even though they planned it that way. And yet, this promise was told that it wasn't going to be through this child. It wasn't going to be through Ishmael. The promise is supposed to be through a different child, through Abram and Sarai's child. And so when you look at this, of course, Hagar had fled because she was upset and she ran off. And then the angel of the Lord told her, "Well, your son isn't going to necessarily be the son of promise, but I'm going to make your son a great nation." And so from Ishmael came the Ishmaelites. And the Ishmaelites became a great nation. In fact, the Ishmaelites became the Arab nation. And so from her and from her son came a great nation. But that's not the nation of promise. And that's why I haven't put anything else up here yet, because we're going through who the nation of promise is coming from. We've got Adam and Eve, then Noah, then Shem, then Terah, then Abram. The Ishmaelites don't count. They're not God's chosen people. They're a great nation, but they're not God's chosen people. God had other plans for that. And so Sarai was able to conceive, and she had a child by the name of Isaac. And she was of great age by that time. Didn't think she would be able to have a child, but she did, and she was able to have a child. Of course, God blessed her to have this child. Genesis chapter 17 and verse 16 says, "And I will bless her and also give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be from her." Verse 18, "And Abram said to God, 'Oh, that Ishmael might live before you.' No, it's not Ishmael." He makes it clear in chapter 18, verses 10 through 14. "And he said, 'I will certainly return to you according to the time of life. And behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son.' Sarah was listening in the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, "After I've grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh, saying, 'I shall surely bear a child since I am old'? Is anything too hard for the Lord? And the appointed time I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son." So, didn't think they could do it with Sarah and Abram. But they did. They had a child. Isaac was born. And in Genesis chapter 21, we see Isaac coming into the picture. And yet there is a covenant that is made in regard to Isaac in Genesis chapter 17, verses 19 through 21. God said, "No, Sarah, your wife shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his descendants after him." So there's the covenant that had been made that is going to come through Isaac. Isaac is born. Genesis chapter 21. Isaac is now born. And he, of course, there's the whole issue with Isaac going to be taken to be sacrificed. Abram was supposed to sacrifice his son. He was going to obey that, but God stopped him and he did not sacrifice his son. Trusting in God, knowing that God's promise was going to be fulfilled and God was going to take care of everything. Didn't know he was going to save his life. He just knew that if he was told to do something, he would do it. So he was planning on sacrificing his son. He didn't do that. But Isaac continued to grow and grew up. And then he married a woman by the name of Rebekah. When Isaac and Rebekah married, they had two sons. They had Jacob and Esau. Esau was the oldest. Jacob was the youngest. We talked about this in a sermon not long ago when we studied about Esau and how Esau lost his birthright because he sold his birthright, and how Esau lost his blessings of being the oldest as Isaac blessed Jacob instead of Esau. And that was all prophesied that would happen. But Jacob is the one, as we continue down our list, who is going to be the important one. And Jacob had 12 sons. Had them by four different women. You remember that Jacob went and worked for a man by the name of Laban for 7 years because there's a woman that he loved, he thought was beautiful, wanted to marry her. And he was planning on marrying Rachel. And he worked for 7 years for this man, thinking that he was then going to be able to marry Rachel. Well, the father then comes and says, "No, Leah is the oldest one. Leah has to go first." And so he had to marry Leah. And then after working for the father 7 more years, was then able to marry Rachel. Well, when he was married to Leah, they had children. They had Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. And if you, even from Bible class age, if you grew up in the church and went to Bible class and learned the 12 sons of Jacob, that's the way I memorized them. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun are the first ones. They're by Leah. They have one other child, which was a woman by the name of Dinah. So Dinah was a seventh one. But six of the sons were born from Leah. Then Rachel had children, Rachel being Leah's sister. Rachel had Joseph and Benjamin. Leah's sister, again, Rachel's the one who he really loved and really wanted to marry to begin with. But Joseph came from her, and Benjamin came from her. And for our intents and purposes, we're going to now go to Joseph. And we're also going to look at another son, but we're going to look at Joseph first. The next one, he had two sons from Rachel's maid by the name of Bilhah, B-I-L-H-A-H. That was Dan and Naphtali. And then he had two sons from Leah's maid, Zilpah, Z-I-L-P-A-H, and that is Gad and Asher. So Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher were the sons that were born, and they are the ones who are going to become the tribes of the land of Israel. But all of these 12 sons are born. Now from these, there's one other that we will go ahead and put up here that's going to be important, and that is Judah. Judah is one that was born from Leah. Leah and Jacob had a son by the name of Judah. Leah and Rachel had a son by the name of Joseph. And we're going to get to Judah here in just a minute, but we'll talk about Joseph before that. And as far as Joseph was concerned, he's the one who Jacob loved the most, treated him the best, loved him the most. Remember, he gave him the coat of many colors. I remember sitting in Bible class, coloring the coat of many colors, whatever my imagination came up with as how to color this coat. We even had, I remember having an actual robe that we would put on that had many colors on it and wrap it around us. Who's going to be Joseph today? And we get to wear the robe with the coat of many colors. So this is a story that we learn in Bible class about that, but Joseph is the one we're going to be talking about first in all of this. Joseph, being his favorite son, made the other sons very jealous. And they decided that they were going to sell Joseph into slavery. And it's over in chapter 37 and on after that. But what happens with Joseph as he's sold into slavery? It's a terrible thing. He's sold into slavery and then he's sold again. And he winds up at Potiphar's house. And then his Potiphar's wife falsely accuses him. And then he gets in trouble and gets thrown in prison. And all of this is happening in his life. Terrible things are happening. But again, this is God putting Joseph in the position that he's going to need to be in. Because through all this, when he's in prison, there's other prisoners who are with him, and they find out about him. It takes them a couple of years, but eventually they say the power that he has, who he is, and the Egyptians get him out and start using him in their kingdom. So he works his way up in the Egyptian kingdom, which is going to be important because there's going to be a famine in the land. And when that famine comes about, people aren't going to have food. And so guess who's going to be going and asking for food from the Egyptians? That's going to be his father, Jacob, is going to send his sons to go do that. So the sons go in order to try to get food from Egypt, from the land where Joseph is now in a position that he's going to be able to help his brothers when they come and ask for the food. He recognizes his brothers, brings a tear to his eye even, but he's able to help them. And remember, he asks to see his brother Benjamin. Remember, Rachel is the one who also had Benjamin. So they had a special relationship. Joseph and Benjamin did. So they go and bring Benjamin back. But regardless, there's this great reunion in the end, and everything is good and everything is happy, and they're together now. He saves his brothers from this famine. But Jacob wants to bless Joseph more than the other brothers. Of course, again, he loved him more anyway, but he wanted to bless him more. And while all these other brothers that we talked about are going to be tribes in the land, they're going to be tribes in the land of Israel. There's going to be 12 tribes. And all these other brothers are going to be tribes. Joseph is going to have two. And the way that he's going to get two tribes is because his children will become the tribes. Look with me in Genesis chapter 48 and verse 5. Genesis chapter 48 and verse 5. Says, and now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt, before I came to you in Egypt, are mine, as Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. So these are the two sons that are going to be like Jacob's sons, and they're going to be as if they are Jacob's sons. They're going to receive a portion of the land. So Joseph is going to get two portions, one portion more than his brothers. So he will have two tribes instead of one. And in Genesis chapter 48 and verse 22 says, moreover, I've given to you one portion above your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and my bow. So in Genesis chapter 49, Jacob gathers his sons together to reveal to them what the future holds for each descendant. Now, again, Joseph has the double portion, the two in the land, Ephraim and Manasseh. But I want you to notice what is said to Judah. And there's something else I want us to notice about this. I'm going to say here in just a minute. But notice what he promises in regard as he is making this prophecy in regard to Judah. In Genesis chapter 49, and we're going to look at verses 8 through 12. Judah, and he's going through each one. You see in verse 5, Simeon and Levi are brothers. So he's going through each one. Verse 3, Reuben, you are my firstborn. Well, he gets to Judah in verse 8. Judah, you are he whom your brother shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp from the prey. My son, you have gone up. He bows down. He lies down as a lion. And as a lion, who shall rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes. And to him shall be the obedience of the people. So it says, from Judah, Shiloh is going to come. And from Shiloh, it says, this is the one who you are going to obey. So the promise is made to Judah that one is going to come from Judah who the people will obey. And this is where Christ came from. This is how Jesus comes into the world. Now, one thing that is very interesting to me about this is that when Jacob went to Laban to work for him in order to be able to marry Rachel, he wasn't able to marry Rachel. He married Leah. Where did Judah come from? Leah. If he wouldn't have married Leah, then Judah wouldn't have been born. So he had to marry Leah first, even for this whole thing to work out as far as Judah coming about, period. And then he loved Rachel and used Joseph too for what we said Joseph was used for. But the Christ is going to come through Judah. And when we look at the genealogy of Jesus over in Matthew chapter 1, Matthew chapter 1, verses 2 through 3, You can go all the way back in this genealogy. We won't look at all of it, but you start looking down through here. Verse 1 mentions Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac begot Jacob, and Jacob begot Judah and his brothers. So Judah, yeah. Joseph, yeah. Benjamin, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, all the rest of them, yeah. But the one that's important as far as Jesus coming to the world is Judah. And it all goes back to Judah. And in Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 14... 7 and verse 14, for it is evident that our Lord arose from Judah, of which tribe Moses spoke nothing concerning priesthood. Now the reason it says spoke nothing concerning priesthood is because the priesthood would come from the tribe of Levi. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. So all these tribes, they have something going on for them. Levi is where the priests came. From the family of Aaron, but from the tribe of Levi. Well, the book of Hebrews has been talking about Jesus being a high priest, Jesus being a high priest, the priesthood is through Jesus. And yet Jesus came from where? Came from Judah. And Judah, because he is a priest from Judah, is not the Levitical priesthood. So the priesthood had to change. So going back in history, Christ was Judah's descendant. Judah was Jacob's son. Jacob was Isaac's son. Isaac was Abraham's son. The promise was made in Abraham's seed, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. Genesis 22 and verse 18. Abraham was Terah's son. Terah was a descendant of Shem, and Shem was Noah's son. You see how God's working? You see how he has it all figured out all the way from the beginning. How am I going to get Jesus into the world? How's it all going to come through Jesus? How am I going to bring salvation to the people through Jesus? Each step of the way is shown us. In Bible class, you start studying in Bible class as a kid, you learn about Joseph and the coat of many colors. You learn about Noah. You learn about his sons. You learn about all these specific stories in the Bible about all of these people. So when we look at how this benefits us, I think it's pretty clear how it benefits us, that God is constantly working to establish his physical kingdom. Then he wants to bring about his physical kingdom. He's setting things in order, preparing Abram and Isaac and Jacob for the nation that will exist, and that is the nation of Israel. It's not the Ishmaelites, it's the nation of Israel. And as God's chosen people, the circumcised Jews, we can see how he is working among them, among the nation, to eventually bring Christ about. So again, can you see God working? When I was growing up, I was taught Old Testament stories. That's what Bible class is for. We learn Old Testament stories. I hope that we're still teaching our kids in Bible class to memorize who the sons of Jacob are. Once I memorized them as a kid, I've never forgot them since. I hope we're memorizing who the apostles are. All the various stories that we're learning. We're learning these stories. We're developing our children so that they will know these things. We're teaching them how Abraham about sacrificed his son and God stopped him. We're teaching them all these various stories. But when I got older, it wasn't until I got older, it clicked. It took a while, And I had to keep having this stuff drilled in my head, but finally it clicked. I realized that these aren't individual stories. These are all tied together for a purpose. And that's what we as Christians need to understand today. But what's interesting about that is that you can separate the stories in order to learn different lessons. Like if you want to learn about perseverance, about not giving up, about trusting God wholly and completely, read the story of Joseph. Read about how he was sold into slavery and all that he went through and all that he put up with. If you want to learn that you must obey God no matter what, and incidentally, I'm switching Tuesday and Wednesday's lessons. That lesson is now going to be Tuesday's lesson, obey God no matter what, on Tuesday. We're going to talk about that, but if you want to know how to do that, you look at Abraham, and you realize he was told to kill his only son. Obey God no matter what? Even if that is asked of you, that's how you learn that. That story tells you that. The story of Jacob and Esau, that'll tell you how to treat one another, how you should treat your brethren, how you should love your brethren and treat them right and not act the way that Jacob did toward Esau and forgive the way that Esau was willing to forgive his brother later in life. We can learn individual stories from all, or individual lessons from all these individual stories. But then when you put them all together, we see them working to bring Christ into the world. And it's through this physical kingdom that that comes. That Christ comes into the world. It is a kingdom, according to the book of Daniel, that cannot be destroyed. It is a kingdom that anyone who wants to be a part of it can be saved and can become a part of this kingdom. And it's a beautiful thing when we see how it all comes about. We need to desire to be a part of this kingdom. We need to desire that we want to be saved in this kingdom and to serve God every day of our lives. I appreciate your attention very much. I appreciate your time and attention in this, and I hope that it was beneficial to you. It certainly was beneficial to me to look back at this and learn this again and to realize that the importance of this in our lives. I look forward to a good meeting. I look forward to the rest of the week. Another sermon here in just a little bit, and then one tonight, and then Monday night, and Tuesday night, and Wednesday night. Look forward to that, and hope that you do too. Let's invite who we can and get people here and spread the gospel.